Good evening, everybody, and welcome to tonight's Radio EduTalk. This is myself, David Noble, as usual in Dalgetty Bay, joined by my co-host, John Johnson, over in Glasgow, and delighted this evening to be joined by Courtney McLeod, who is the founder of the Scottish Media Academy, and Courtney's online various places, including Twitter, and also blogs occasionally at allmediascotland.com. Welcome to the show, Courtney. Could you start maybe with a kind of outline about what your present roles are, and maybe a little bit about how you've been working with school-aged young people?
Sure, yes. Firstly, thank you very much for having me on tonight, and hello to everybody. The Academy was launched about 18 months ago now, really. We do a complete range of services, and some supporting education in relation to schools and colleges, others standalone courses that we deliver from our stations. We also provide various corporate services and work with partners on a number of different funded projects. So the kind of role of the Academy is quite broad, and the work that we do to support and work with young people is really one aspect of all that we do, and probably one of the most exciting aspects, given how kind of contagious the energy can be from young people. I suppose it's probably worth just explaining a little bit of the background to the Academy so that it makes a little bit more sense. But my background was, I started off life as a journalist, and then after working for ITV for quite a while, I went into teaching, worked as an academic advisor, programme leader, a teaching fellow, various roles, and then approached Bauer about the idea of launching an academy. They already had some courses up and running that they had been testing and had their own reasons for wanting to launch an academy. So the stars just aligned quite effortlessly, and that they were already quite advanced, and I was really keen to come in and try and help support and deliver some of that. So the Academy was really launched by Graham Bryce, who is the MD within Bauer Scotland at that time, and I worked with him to make sure that it fitted his needs in terms of finding talent and developing talent, as well as what my needs were, which was very much about trying to fill a void or bridge some gaps that I felt existed within media education provision. And so in a year, I think we've made quite big advances. And as someone who's an academic, I'm really excited by how young people have responded to the Academy and the feedback that we've had from them. In some ways, for me, it's been a bit of an experiment to see what happens if you take university teaching and you bring it inside the industry and kind of turn it inside out slightly. And in terms of how young people have engaged, it's been pretty phenomenal. The things that I used to find really hard inside the university are now quite easy. Needless to say, some of the things I find easy are now slightly hard. But in terms of learner engagement and, there being a momentum around classes and being able to develop some key skills such as creativity and communication and confidence, these things are so much easier within the Academy than I ever felt in my previous life inside a university. So that's a bit about how, the Academy and what we plan to do. Some of the work we've done within schools has been going in and designing and delivering teaching sessions. And that we've done it from as young as, the youngest group was primary 2. So that's quite young. six-year-olds. I think that's probably one of the most nerve-wracking experiences for me, standing in front of 25 six-year-olds. It was a whole new experience. But that media maker type of activity has worked really well. So we've done bits of that. We've also partnered with Go Think Big, which is a Bauer O2 initiative, and we've had groups of young people come in to our stations for media training. We've also worked really closely with Young Scot to deliver a number of different activities for young people. Almost all of what we do is really designed to try and support the curriculum for excellence. Mm-hmm. So we try and align things so we don't parachute in to places and then kind of try and come out. We try and leave, build momentum around things and leave a footprint, leave resources that can be shared, and kind of create something that's helping the agenda that's being pushed through just now anyway.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a great introduction, Courtney. We're just going to have a general chat about kind of school business partnerships within the sort of media and related industries for the next 25 minutes or so. And listeners, as ever, can get in touch with the show and put questions or comments straight to Courtney. So there's two ways that you can do that. If you pop something up on Twitter and include the hashtag EduTalk, or if you prefer to use email, just send something into EduTalk, edutalkr@hotmail.co.uk. This sounds really appealing, and I would imagine we all have been teachers at some point. Would I be right in saying, Courtney, that this is an area of the new curriculum? Well, so first of all, I suppose it covers many areas of the new curriculum, but I would imagine in many schools, just with the kind of roots into teaching or the academic backgrounds of many practitioners, that this might be an area where either they feel quite intimidated when they're being asked to, or not confident, shall we say, about delivering particular parts of the curriculum to do with media, or where their skills and their knowledge might be out of date in this kind of digital age. Is that what you find? Is there a desperate need to have yourself and others involved in schools?
I mean, the fact that we have, the academy has a media school within it, and that media school delivers a 5-day multimedia course, and it runs over the summer holidays, October and Easter holidays. So that's clearly designed for young people who are on school holidays. And what kind of astonished me at the start of this was that we had teachers applying to come on the course. So they were wanting to come on the course alongside, youngsters, but they were struggling to access media training of that type that they felt would support their one, understanding of young people, because the way that young people engage with the media now is that it can't, media training or education can't be reserved for people who want to work in that industry anymore. That's, I mean, those days have well gone, where only people who were working in media needed to have a knowledge, understanding, and the relevant skills. And we all can see how we all engage with media constantly, and that young people, to do it effectively and to do it confidently, and really importantly, creatively, it requires teaching. You know, you may be able to work a phone, and you may be able to, use Twitter and Facebook and write a blog, but are you doing it well? Could you be doing it better? And actually, could we be linking that back into a whole lot of other skills? Because a lot of media skills are very transferable anyway. So if that's about presentation or writing techniques, we do a lot in the academy about writing for the ear. So obviously most people are taught from the age of 4 or 5 to write for the eye. And writing for the ear is a completely different style, a different skill altogether. So some of these skills aren't just relevant for media, but just relevant to young people now and how they're engaging with each other, what they're putting on their blogs and their podcasts and what they're tweeting. So, and it always strikes me in the academy that we quite often have presenters and producers from the stations come in and and talk or work with the students, and quite often they'll come in and say, okay, who here wants my job? And 9 times out of 10 half the group say, no, I want to be a nurse, I want to be an engineer, I want to run my own hairdressers. So they don't want to work in the industry necessarily, but they understand that they require media training and skills and development, and the academy is one of the few places where they can access that without actually having to sign up for a long-term course or a 4-year degree. So I think young people have perhaps worked out quicker than the rest of us in education that this type of this is a genuine need. Genuinely, they are understanding that this is something that they are missing. And obviously, not all young people are missing it, because some people will get it through school systems or clubs or parents. But generally, media has changed so quickly that young people are now in a position where they're engaging constantly with it, but they don't necessarily have the right skills, or even just the right attitude to know how to use it effectively. And I think we hear that quite a lot from teachers. In fact, from February, we're doing our first teacher training day, which will be through the station in Glasgow through Clyde One. And, you know, within that, we'll be giving some, you know, general stuff to do with how to use media, but also just how to use media in terms of just general teaching, because it's something that young people obviously find quite effortless to engage with, and it's the way they work. So just, it's not just about learning the media skills, but learning how to just absorb that into your teaching and use it within your classroom and use it kind of creatively and confidently. It doesn't have to be a big deal. It can be pretty straightforward. But just working with teachers to help them make that transition if they haven't made it before.
Courtney, thanks very much. I mean, it just sounds very interesting from all sorts of reasons, but this is John Johnson here. I have a primary school background, and I wonder, just could you make this a little more concrete by, you said you were going into primary twos, so could you maybe describe the sorts of activities, maybe not at primary two, but say, you know, in primary, any primary you like, really, what sort of activities you would do in a day?
Okay, sure. Well, one of my favourite ones is a session where basically we go in and we get them to revise. So everything the Academy does is designed by a kind of team of academics and media professionals. So that's the kind of, what we hope would be the unique aspect of the Academy, is that we're teaching, but we're also doing it in a kind of cutting edge sort of way in relation to bringing in some media experts. So this particular activity was put together by a team of people who have a background in education and just a industry background. And so what this activity does is we go in, we provide about 90 minutes media training, again, talking about these skills being very transferable. So we work with them on their voice, and we talk to them about the different colours in their voice and how they can use them effectively. We also explain to them that they've been using it effectively since they were about two, when they ask for a biscuit in a different type of way from one parent to the other. So, you know, we make it clear to them that these are skills that these guys have. You know, they can really communicate, but we need to make sure that we can see that we can do that and do it, you know, do it kind of skillfully. So we do lots on voice. We do a bit on writing styles. We do a bit on interviewing, you know, how to ask the right questions in the right order, how to make your interviewee feel comfortable when you're talking with them and asking them things. So we do all of this sort of stuff. And then we hook it all into an activity that they've been doing already in class. So this is the kind of revision bit where we get them to make a radio show, and they have to reflect back. So some examples would be a castles project was one, but it could be a field trip, or it could be something across the school, you know, some green environmental project. Doesn't matter so much what it is, but it's hooked back into something that they've previously been learning about. And then we leave them a pack, which they spend maybe half an hour on every day for a week. And in that, they have to reflect on their learning. So they have to, in order to prepare the interview, they have to think about, you know, the questions, the content, when they're thinking about doing their little report on their field trip or on how they've decorated their classroom. They have to use the right terminology, and they have to think through, you know, they have to recall it and talk about it and have a bit of critical thinking about it. And then we go back and we record them doing interviews, and the interview could be with the teacher, it could be with each other, it could be with a parent, it could be with someone from the community, a police officer who's come in, but they do an interview or more than one sometimes. And someone's obviously the presenter and anchors the kind of show, and they have their mini reports, and they have little boxes, and then we record it, we put it all together, we take it away, and then with the magic of Bauer, we edit it all and put in some, you know, jingles, wishes, and bits and pieces that that make it sound pretty snazzy, and then we send it back to them, and they can present it at their assemblies, they can share it with their parents, they can put it on the school website, and the students are really proud of what they do, because they have to work really hard to do it. I mean, they work on it, we're only there for the first day, and then we go back, but they're working on that for about a week. So that's one of the examples of the type of work we do. So it's media training, but it's using media training to get them to reflect back on their prior learning. So it's basically revision. It doesn't feel like revision, but that's what it is. And the feedback from the students, from the teachers and parents has been great. I mean, these things are they're good fun. Learning can be and should be really good fun. So that's one of the examples of some of the types of activities that we would do inside the school.
Thanks. That sounds great. It's the sort of thing I think David and I have been evangelising about, not as maybe serious media, but as using podcasting in classroom for a long time. And I'm really interested. You focus on radio. You focus on radio, yeah, as opposed to video.
Well, yes and no. The Academy is multimedia. Bower as a company is multimedia. So the Academy is, my background is mostly telly. I don't have a very extensive radio background. However, naturally, because we run the Academy runs out of Bower's radio stations, I have access to more facilities and more staff that are able to deliver on that. So a lot of our courses and a lot of the work that we're currently doing in schools or with School Think Big are have a radio emphasis, I would say. But also part of that, my reason really for doing that is because the radio element is quite simple and straightforward. It's not really intimidating for youngsters. You know, we talk to them about how talking into a microphone is like talking into a mobile phone, and you know, you're talking to one person on the other end and you're thinking about the story that you're telling them and you're talking through the microphone, and most young people, when you say that, go, all right, yeah, fair enough. Cameras can be a little bit more daunting, and also can just, in terms of our production, take us longer to deliver. But going forward, I wouldn't expect that all of the activities that we do inside schools would be with a radio focus. I would probably suggest that just right now, because we're just a year in and we're running our radio stations, it's kind of taken that natural emphasis.
I mean, it's a sort of hobby horse of mine when talking to other teachers, that if you're going to do a project involving media, that radio is a really good place, or audio is a good place to start, because there's just less things to worry about, you know, camera angles.
There's
all
almost
sort of
nothing
stuff
to worry about. And you can have really good quality, very high quality, with equipment that's not expensive to buy. You know, you can do stuff on your iPhone now. So you know, it's not as if there's a big cost that the school has to meet to be able to do that. And that's one of the things that's really important for me in the Academy, is that we are about capacity building. You know, there is no point in us going in and doing something that might look brilliant with a million bells and whistles on it that actually gets great feedback, but the teacher can't do something similar with the week after we've left. You know, that's not what the Academy is trying to do. We're trying to build capacity within schools. We're trying to, you know, educate, inform, hopefully inspire all the young people that we work with, but we're also trying to support teachers and make sure that the packs and the activities we leave them, they're able to share, and that some of what we have been doing, they may never create the radio show like we have done, but they may be tempted to get their phone out or get some microphone and get kids to interview each other again. And that's, if that's the one thing that comes out of us going in and doing something, then that's great.
Yeah, certainly, it'd be super. I mean, as I say, it's something that we've been interested in for a number of years. And I mean, I found my current post is training teachers in ICT, and I found it much harder to get people interested in audio than video for some reason, and I don't understand why, because I always found it much easier to do in the classroom, because all you needed was really a computer and a mic and a copy of Audacity, and away you went.
I agree entirely, and I also think that part of the beauty of using audio is that there's less distractions, so the young people, the learners, aren't, you know, distracted by everything that's going on around them. They're actually thinking about their work, and their focus is still on, in our experience, it would still be on the coursework or the project or the field trip. You know, they're not distracted by the camera being set up next to them, or, you know, somebody setting up a light or whatever else. So from our point of view, in terms of the work that we're doing inside schools, audio works really effectively, and it's something that I think is a mechanism for building confidence, is pretty significant. I think most people would watch a video back of himself and think, that's maybe not quite great. With audio, you might listen to yourself and think, oh, God, I didn't realise I sound like that. But once you get over that, there's not the same fear factor. And so I think for a lot of the young people we work with, when they hear the quality of the material we send them back, and yes, we have edited it and it sounds like a bit, with a bit more imaging in it, they're proud. They're really proud of what they've done. So in terms of building confidence, which is obviously key, then using audio is really effective.
Courtney, I'm thinking back to previous Scottish Learning Festivals, and it certainly hasn't happened in recent years, maybe because of the budgets and the cost factor. But I remember several companies at the Bet Show in London as well, selling a wholesale kind of school radio station that the costs are many thousands of pounds, and that would be probably to justify the cost would need to be on air for several hours a week at least. Now, this approach appears to be completely different. It sounds to me as if it's much more about content of the audio, maybe spoken word, and much more about the process rather than just the output. So I'm just wondering if, at the same time, Bill being a commercial organisation with a portfolio of radio stations, for example, including Clyde 1 and 2, if you're maybe looking at building capacity maybe for yourselves for the future in terms of identifying future talent maybe at university level, do you still work with kind of school radio stations, or is it more about the kind of broad brush covering whole classes, whole year groups, and giving them some kind of taster and then seeing where it goes?
There's kind of two answers to that, I suppose. One is that we haven't really been approached by many schools that have radio equipment that want to use it, that want us to work with them to use it, which is something we are actively working on, because we know there are lots of radio studios that have been put into schools that are currently not being used at all. A teacher came in, a great idea a few years ago to get this, they got it, and that teacher's since left, and now it's sitting, not being used. So we know of quite a few examples where there are resources that we would like to go in and try and help bring to life. But we haven't, most of the work that we've done so far hasn't really been about working with schools in terms of their own radio stations. But we do that with some colleges, and we certainly do it with local community radio stations. We work closely with them, and there's an example, an East Lothian, East Coast FM, when they have a school show called The School Bell, and we've had quite a number of their students come in, and they're maybe presenters or producers, and they've come in and done some of our shows or some of our courses with us, and we've kind of aligned that to try and help them with the show that they're doing. So yeah, we're very keen to wherever there is the opportunity to do something that's meaningful and that is supportive, then we would like the opportunity. But we haven't done much, and we haven't been approached really by schools that have radio equipment that they're looking to use. And so as a result, most of the time when we go into schools, we're not talking about you're going to need to spend $10,000 on a radio station. We're talking about you probably have all this in your bag. You really don't need much to be able to start doing some of the stuff that we are doing. And I think that's just it's just true. It doesn't have to be a big, huge investment. If it's an investment, it should be an investment of your imagination or your time or your energy. It shouldn't really require a huge investment in terms of money to get young people thinking either like journalists or thinking about creative content like producers. You don't need a studio to start doing that, I don't think.
And what kind of tech and online resources, etc., do you refer to or promote? And you're kind of alluding there that it can be DIY and people can use the tech that they have on them. So what kind of maybe media or broadcasting equipment do you not get into? Are you talking about kind of getting across the point that you can do all this purely with what you've got, or with a little bit of investment?
Well, some teachers have you know asked us about what would we recommend if they were getting if they were to have a radio studio put in, and one of the ones we would recommend is Clyde Broadcast Synergy, just because it's quite a good size and it's really quite easy to use, and it's just it doesn't take up too much space, and students can get up and running and feeling really confident in it quickly. But at the same time, you could just have Audacity and you could just record stuff on your phone, and you know it's not. And in some ways, it's about the teacher feeling confident, I think, is one of the keys to it. So if a teacher feels that they are comfortable with using recording them on an iPhone and emailing it and or editing it or whatever, then they'll lead. So, you know, there's one thing getting all the young people engaged and enthused and learning, but actually the key to this is getting teachers to see the benefits and you know, to recognise that it's not that big a deal. And once they've done it once or twice, they'll probably pretty much enjoy doing it. I mean, it can be a welcome change. And something that they, you know, the chances are if that teacher has young people, children at home, they'll probably be doing some of this themselves. So it's not, I just don't think it requires a huge amount of investment. It just requires a step in a certain direction by teachers.
So, Courtney, if a teacher was interested in coming along to your summer course, you said you did day courses. Yeah. The sort of things that they expect there, I'm beginning to think it would probably be quite like what you actually would do in school. You would be teaching the teachers the same sort of thing. Could you maybe talk to that? Sort of, I've come in for a day course.
I mean, as I mentioned, we've had some teachers sign up to do the 5-day course, which was really designed for the young people. It was great, you know, it's not that, but it wasn't what we designed it to do. So naturally, on the back of recognising that there were teachers who were supposed to come along to that, we thought, all right, we should maybe start creating something else to suit that specific need. So some of our other courses, for example, are we have a month-long radio masterclass, and we also have a separate course, which is a 6-week studio skills type course. And the studio course obviously teaches you how to use the studio and elements of editing. The masterclass is much more about creative content, and you know the equipment that you need isn't very much, but it's more thinking about how you produce, how you generate ideas, how you find stories, how you tell stories, a bit more about the business of putting together radio, and so the two separate courses, both potentially relevant to teachers, but based on the feedback we're getting from teachers about is it a one-day sort of course we can come on, we've worked on that and we've developed something that I feel is good. One, because it should hopefully be very enjoyable. They're based, these sessions are based in our studios. There's an element of team building within them. You know, there's also an element of developing and not necessarily promoting, but certainly communicating more about the curriculum for excellence in amongst relevant media training. And the first time that we'll run this session is specifically for teachers will be in February. So we haven't done one yet. We've designed it and put it together, but it won't actually happen until February. And we just want that to be an option for staff really on in service days and also for groups of teachers from one school or across schools to come in. And a lot of what we do, everything we do inside the academy is tailored and customised. So, you know, we don't run the same course twice. We never go into the same school and run the same activity twice. So I don't expect that with any element of teacher training, we'll do the same thing twice. I imagine there'll always be elements of it that are tailored to suit that school-specific interest or need, or the teachers, or the, you know, the, making it timely and the agenda of the day and da da da. So we haven't delivered the teacher training element yet, but we will be doing it in mid-February.
Brilliant. It sounds like a wonderful course. I'm just wondering if I'll have a CPD budget left in the new year.
I'm thinking the same, John. Courtney, to come back to something you said almost at the top of the show, you were saying about how important it is for all young people to get some kind of media training, even if, you know, they're thinking of being owning their own salon or becoming a nurse or what have you. Mm-hmm. And you were saying that there were, this might be putting you on the spot a little bit at this time of night, but you were talking about the need to have healthy attitudes to media nowadays. Can you say a bit more about, in your opinion, or through maybe some of the research that you were talking about, what these healthy attitudes are?
Yeah, I think just because of the way, you know, the last decade has been and how young people are engaging with media, they naturally see it as something that's it's for fun, it's social, it's something you do maybe outside of school, because you're not really allowed to do anything in school. So it's something that they do in their home, you know, when they're relaxing, whether it's Facebook or social media, generally Twitter, or writing blogs or commenting on posts or whatever. And so I think quite often young people come into our academy with the attitude of their engagement with media is purely for fun. And what we do in the academy very carefully is we don't take any sort of, we don't preach and, you know, act all, you know, teacher like and, well, did you know social media is actually going to damage your reputation or you're going to, we don't do any of that. But what we do is we kind of pepper all of our courses with these little, hopefully light bulb moments of, oh, did you realize? And, oh, did you know? Had you ever heard of this? Or here's an example of one of our students. And some of them are positive stories. So, you know, we have given in the academy, we've only been up and running for 18 months, but we have given some of our students through the talent pipeline side of our academy work. And some of those students have been given work, not entirely, but largely because of the quality of their blogs and also the quality of their Twitter feed. Because that, for us, is something that is really revealing about young people. But I don't think young people would necessarily expect us to be looking at that. If they sent us their CV, they'll think that that's all that we'll look at. And, well, of course, it's not. And so I think some of it is about getting young people to realise that, yes, social media is something that they do at home or for fun, but it's not only for fun. It's actually something that they can harness absolutely to their advantage. It can be their shop front. They can, you know, set their privacy settings more carefully. They can also think about the audience that they're sending material to. So on Facebook, if they're posting pictures that are relevant to just family, just release it to family. If it's something, you know, that you can be more sophisticated in your approach to social media than just giving everybody everything. And we get, you know, we give kind of examples of that. But one of the things that always catches me in that media school, we have we talk about filter bubbles, and there's a really excellent TED talk, and it's called Filter Bubbles, and we let the students see that, and that always strikes me about how young people are utterly outraged at the idea that when they are searching for information in the web, which they think is this huge black hole of information that will give them what they're looking for, that actually is very much customized to them and to their previous searches, and that it's kind of excluding them from certain information just because of what they've looked at before. And I've never yet had a young person say to me, well, I don't care about that. I don't care. Most of them are surprised because they're unaware, but they are unhappy with the idea that actually there's some sort of editorial process going on the web that they can't see. The Filter Bubbles TED Talks is something that we talk a lot about in class. And so I think part of it with young people and their use of media is that it should be great and it should, you know, and it should be positive. But they're off a group where they're kind of got the best and the worst of both worlds. They've got the best in that they've kind of first waved to have all this access to all this great stuff, but they haven't had the support really and been able to understand what it is they're looking at yet and what it is that they're actually doing. And yes, having a global audience sounds wonderful, but actually it's not wonderful if you are not mapping that all very effectively. So, yeah, but we don't, in the Academy, we're very, very careful about not, you know, we say at the beginning of classes, this is a creative industry, this is not a classroom, you know, it's a whole different setting. So one thing we don't do is then preach to them about, you know, you should go home and check your privacy settings. But we deliberately kind of chuck in quite a few little stories and little anecdotes that get them working that out for themselves.
That just sounds great. And I'm trying to get an idea of it. I mean, when you look at your website, you've got quite a lot of people working in the academy, a lot of different tutors. And you, when you go out to schools, what sort of area in Scotland are you covering? Are you national or are you centred in the central belt?
The team of people that we're delivering on the academy is, I think every day I kind of pinch myself because I think the team that we've got is really exciting in relation to the academics, but also the range of media professionals. And what I probably really love about it is that they're not all Bauer people, the media professionals. We've got people from a range of organisations that have worked for the BBC, Sky, and for The Independent, The Herald, you know, the whole mixture. So the Academy's team is really very diverse and very collaborative. It depends where, obviously, those tutors are based all over the place, so it can depend where they are and what their availability is in terms of what we can do. It's not as if all of those people are sitting inside Bauer every day. Just unfortunately, I'm not just at my disposal. So we're working, we're working with them to make it, great things happen, but they are based all over the place, which is a good thing. I'd say in this year, the bulk of the activity that we have done has been in the Central Belt. However, Graham Bryce, who I mentioned, launched the Academy in Bauer, is absolutely adamant that that's a year one, because we had to get up and running, and we quite frankly had to start somewhere. I work out of Forth One and I work out of Clyde One. Increasingly, I'll work out of other stations. One of the reasons I wanted to work with Bauer on this was because of the network of stations it has across Scotland. So you're from Gala Shields, Dundee, Aberdeen, Inverness. You know, it's got seven radio stations that technically the academy can work from. And I look at that as thinking that's resources within communities and that can link into schools right across Scotland. Now, there was nobody else that I could partner with or go to with an idea for this that had those real community links and resources and studios in such, literally across Scotland. So we have in the last year, our activities have been mainly, not entirely, but mainly based within within the Central Belt. However, our Go Think Big activities have, and we delivered maybe 800 Go Think Big activities this year. They were across all of our stations. So in that way, our reach has been national, but in relation to some of the stuff in schools, it has been just Central Belt, maybe a bit in Dundee. So that for next year is work in progress.
Brilliant. And just a last question for me, Courtney, and then I think one from mm-hmm. David. I'm just wondering, are you thinking of moving into a lot of people looking at online training or educating online?
That was one of the things that when we first launched the academy was kind of top of my list to do, was to have online courses. I suppose partly that was because it's easy to do what you've done before, and I kind of felt like that was something I knew about, so it would be easy to replicate it. We haven't launched any courses that are entirely online, and we may, but at the minute, the reason for that is just the feedback has been that people really want in. They want into the industry. They physically, and we've had, although our courses are obviously in Scotland, we've had people from England come up to do them. But part of the drive seems to be that they want to physically be in the building. They want to spend time inside the industry. They want to be networking with media professionals. They want to be in the studios. They want to be sitting in the canteen, chatting to anybody who comes in. And I think that's quite right. Sure. I think that makes perfect sense. And in some ways, it's maybe a bit old school to think, you know, physically go somewhere. But the feedback has been that that's been something that's really worked. So at the minute, we don't have any courses that are specifically online. Yeah. I imagine we will have at some point in the future. If we do, I would like to think it would be a course that maybe relates to business and media, just because I think from the inquiries we get, that's something that's needed and there's an interest in. But at the minute, the courses that we run are there's elements of independent learning and distance learning within them. So, you know, there's bits of that within it, but there's none at the minute that are entirely online.
Right. Obviously teachers always really appreciate getting out for a day to concentrate on something, but more and more of us are looking at online and MOOCs and things like that because of finances. To get out of school for a day now is very difficult. Some of the online open-ended courses seem to be growing in popularity sort of internationally, I think, rather than locally.
I think that's something that, you know, I'm really, in terms of directing the academy, I'm just quite clear on, is that if there's someone else doing it, unless we could do it in a way that's, you know, considerably different or superior or better, then we're not here to reinvent the wheel. You know, there's a lot of really good stuff going on, and that's great. I'm delighted. There's the stuff that happens within the academy is pretty unique. What we try to do is find a space. Where is the space that we can add some serious value and, you know, make a difference and build capacity and develop our academy as a business? And that's not necessarily challenging any other course that exists, because if it exists and it's doing well, then there's not necessarily a need for us to step in and help with anything or do anything differently. So part of it, I think, in relation to, and I understand exactly what you're saying about teachers getting out of school and the cost of that, actually the benefits of getting teachers outside of school and getting them inside a creative industry is a whole game changer for people. And not just teachers, I mean, with all of our corporate clients, I have this conversation a lot about, well, could you come in and do the training in our offices? And the answer is yes, I could, but no, I won't, because you could get someone else to do that. The real benefit of this academy is that it sits within the industry. And that, in terms of opening up people's minds, changing their expectations, pulling them out of their comfort zone, all of that stuff is really pretty significant when you're trying to make a considerable difference. So the work that we do in the academy is largely held within our studios. And at the minute, I'm pretty confident that's the right way for it to be.
Okay. Well, and just finally for myself, is somebody looking in very much from the outside, although I've dabbled with podcasting and live radio shows online over the last few years, but the media industry seemed to have changed beyond all recognition. It's been a time of upheaval recently, and obviously there's been space for innovation as well. Can you just to finish up, can you say something, you know, for any listeners out there about where the opportunities lie presently and where they're likely to lie in the future for a challenging, worthy career in media? What kind of openings are there?
What sort of opportunities are there for people to work within the media?
Yeah,
I would say that, well, as I mentioned, you know, part of Darren's reason for launching the academy was to find and develop talent, and, you know, our senior managers would say that, you know, if we find the right people, they'll make a job. You know, we're media is built on creative people, and it's built on ideas and people who will take a risk and people who will be innovative, and so I think a lot of that kind of comes back maybe to something that we touched on earlier, which is about and I talk kind of in relation to Bauer, but just generally in media and creative industries, is that it's a lot of it is about the attitude and the passion and the, you know, the ability to find and tell stories. So as much as the world of media is changing at a phenomenal rate, and there's more gadgets and, you know, there's more, you know, trends to keep up with than ever before, some of the stuff that I look for in students is pretty old school traditional stuff, you know, about finding stories, telling stories, knowing your audience, being linked into your community, being creative, and all of these things. So I think for anyone looking for a step into the industry, then it's about being multimedia. I think there's employers now that want people who are one-trick ponies, so being multimedia, but also maybe having a passion for radio. So yes, you can work a camera, and yes, you can write a good online article, but you've got a passion for music. That's great, but I think people have to be increasingly multimedia, and I think they have to have an attitude where they absolutely embrace change, because change within media has it's been constant, and it's certainly not going to stop. So having someone who really enjoys lifelong learning and development and wants to go on a bit of a journey, that doesn't want to be doing the same job in 5 years' time, because the job can't be the same in 5 years' time. So it's a bit about the mindset, the passion, yes, the skills and knowledge, but really a lot to do with having the right attitude and being able to work really collaboratively with people and having just a big imagination. You know, these are the things that, in terms of coming up with content for shows or doing a good interview, these are all essential things.
Oh, fantastic answer, Courtney. What a way to finish. Thank you so much. John, any final thoughts?
No, I think I'm all questioned out. That was really interesting, yeah. Courtney. I much appreciate your time. Big thank you, especially as we approach Christmas. And everybody's got lots of stuff to do. It was great to get you here, and we appreciate it. We should have this live over or as a podcast on edutalk.cc in a day or two, depending, and we'll pop in the various links to your sites and Twitter in the show notes. If there's anything else that, you know, anything else you haven't sent us that you want linked up, if you send us that, we'll do that as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if anybody listens to
thank
podcast,
you very much. Thank you. It was super to talk with you both. Thank you for your time. I'll go now and wrap a few more presents to be under the tree. I hope you have a great Christmas. And we say a fantastic 2014.
Thank you. Thanks again, Courtney. All the best.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Take care. Bye bye.
Bye now. And John, just before we wrap up, we'll just say a big thank you to everybody who's appeared on EduTalk in 2013, all the people who have listened in and provided lots of support in kind, for example, conference organisers and such like. The very much all systems go in the new year. We've got our Wednesday shows, which are already, I won't say filling up, but we've got lots of great guests penciled in. We've got a few confirmations already. For example, we've got Derek Robertson, formerly of Learning and Teaching Scotland, who's now a lecturer at University of Dundee. He'll be on the show in mid-February, and towards the end of February we've got Nick Hood, teaching fellow at University of Edinburgh, so they'll be great shows. We've also got Gemma P. Duck on Twitter, who's going to be talking about her professional recognition project on one of her Thursday shows. So we'll continue with our fortnightly shows and our Thursday weekly shows and a Wednesday, and also a wee thing that I'm working on over the festive break is to try and get a series of international keynote speakers, so speakers who have been booked into major education conferences, face-to-face conferences around the world, and where it appears online that their live talks have gone down well. I'm trying to get a few of these keynote speakers to appear on EduTalk, and I've got some success so far. I won't reveal any names, but aiming high and hoping to have some great shows in that series during 2014. So just like to thank everybody again. John?
Brilliant. Yep, that sounds great. Kind of looking forward to it. And as usual, we're always open to ideas. There's plenty of hours in the day on the radio. So we'll just say, I think, good night, and thank you for listening, and see you next year. or hear you next year. Cheers.